M1 is the finance super app where you can invest, borrow, save, and spend all in one place. You set your strategy, and they automate it for free in an easy-to-use app. M1 is making money management easier, smarter, and more automated than ever. If you're like me and you struggle to make time for investing, or anything really, M1 is the best set-it-and-forget-it investing app I've ever used. Go to m1finance.com/Katoon to get started today and earn $30 to invest after you fund your account. Terms and conditions apply. M1, yours to build. I think a lot of people who listen to the show probably are familiar with Founder Suite. I know that you have a great podcast, and I'm sure that people who listen to your podcast also are familiar, but I feel like a lot of times there's these companies and you're one of them, that are become commonplace. Like you hear the name a million times, they're referred to a million times. You're like, Oh yeah. I know that one. But in actuality, like, did you go to the site? Did you look it up? Did you see what they do? Like, have you actually been part of it? No, it's just part of the dialect. And
sure. Yeah.
I'm excited to dive into this. Like, let's start with the beginning of what Founder Suite is. And then if everything goes right and neither one of us spaz out and fall down during this podcast, people at the end of this, I hope, will know a little bit about why you did it. And we'll talk a little bit about your podcast as well.
Yeah, it sounds good. I'll rewind the clock a few years. I started my career in investment banking. So I was working with companies raising capital. I worked at Piper Jaffray, which is a Midwest investment bank, and worked in JP Morgan's private placement group out in New York. And that was mostly helping later stage companies raise capital, right? That's what you hire an investment banker for, one of the reasons. And I did that for a while and then went out to Silicon Valley on my own and hung out a shingle called Venture Archetypes and kind of took the playbook I learned at JP Morgan, brought it down to the earlier stage startups, raising seed, Series A, and did that for a while, really just helping companies raise their early stage rounds as a consultant or fractional CFO. We kind of had different labels and did that for a while. And that was really fun and interesting and learned a lot about startups and how startups work and how fundraising works. But really, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, like a founder, not a consultant necessarily. And, you know, was looking for an idea to hatch, but didn't have any good ideas. And then kind of like, after 10 years, the light bulb finally went off. That's how slow I am. The light bulb finally went off and like, hey, why don't we actually build products for fundraising, for raising capital? Because that's what I know how to do. And that's where Founder Suite was born. So it was kind of a direct evolution of my job helping companies raise capital. And that was 6-7 years ago. That's why you might've heard of us in the past, because we've been around a healthy amount of time. Yeah.
I mean, it's very much like Technori for the Midwest. Everybody's like, oh yeah, I know Technori. Yeah, I've been to an event or I might have seen a show. No one knows anything about the business, or to be honest, as a guy running it, I don't know anything about the business, but people know the name and they didn't necessarily align it with any particular thing. And I think it was one of those things where you get like when we used to do the stage event, you would have people be like, oh yeah, I was at Technori last night. And like, oh yeah, the event. Yeah. You're like, no. I was doing like pitch prep for the event. Like we had this whole thing set up. Like no one knew what was going on. And I feel like your name is a little bit more transparent. It's a little bit more obvious that what you're trying to build is a suite of tools for founders to use as they go and they raise money and they prepare themselves and so forth. But I do think it's one of those things that gets kind of passed over. So I totally resonate with your journey to this point, like this, like we're at JP, we're raising, you know, bigger bucks. I'm trying to bring sort of the same sort of sophistication down to the lower level.
Yep.
You come to the realization that they're missing all of these tools and like the idea of repetition is just not existent. They're just literally just shooting random shots into the air, hoping to hit a bird. What is the first product that you're like, okay, before we do this, let's get our shit together?
When I was working as a consultant or investment banker, one of the things we would do, you're a startup, you would come to us, we would do the research, help build you a target investor list. maybe that's 50, 100, 200 investor targets or prospects. And then we would load it all up into this nice fancy spreadsheet. And then we'd hand you, the founder, the spreadsheet of investors, and you'd use this spreadsheet to track all your, you know, everything that happens after that, all the interactions and follow-ups. And that is fine. A spreadsheet's obviously very flexible, cheap, but a spreadsheet gets really messy really quickly if you've ever actually done a fundraise, right? You're talking to a couple hundred investors and, you know, it's really just hard to keep track of every follow-up and action item in a spreadsheet. So our first product was our investor CRM. So this is just a Kanban board, if you're familiar with it, kind of like a Trello, where each investor is represented by a card, and you have your columns and you're moving them through the stages of the fundraising process, from contacted to pitch to, you know, pitch meeting to diligence, committed, so on and so forth. So that was our first product, and that was 6 years ago. And then we've just been building another, adding like one or two products every year ever since then. So, yeah.
I've raised a decent amount of capital, but Technori has always been sort of a tool for people to launch. You know, it's not about like, yeah, you might meet the investor or whatever. We were never, if we did help on the deck, we didn't physically help. It's like you get run the pitch. Like, here's what I would try to do if I were you. Here's how I'd communicate what we're doing. We never got into the tools part of it. And I think part of that was, well, if I'm being honest, I'm like a Rain Man in my head on some things. And then like organized, like I'm very organized, but I don't use any tools. I have this like sort of like paper pencil system that is not really transferable. And so now at Songfinch, you know, we raised our pre-seed, then our series seed, we're prepping into series A right now. And my partner and CEO, John's like, can I get you an Asana? Can I, is there just like anything I can do? Cause right now we're just like plugging a USB into the back of your head and download all right. these conversations. And I genuinely feel like, you hate to say this, cause like building a product and building a team and managing and growing, like all that stuff is really hard. But I almost think depending on who you are and where you come from in business or elsewise, almost environmentally, like where you grew up, raising capital might be the hardest thing that there is in the entire part of the business, at least in the first, you know, managing later is one thing, but like that first million of raised or revenue is an absolute bitch. And I genuinely don't think people appreciate like what you provide them.
You're so right. Raising money is so much harder than it looks like when you're reading, you know, reading TechCrunch or listening to the podcast. It's way harder than that. It's almost an impossible task if you actually like sit down and objectively look at it, right? You are asking strangers for the most part, sometimes family and friends, but oftentimes it's strangers to write you a check based on a wildly unproven speculative idea that you have. You know, maybe it's got a little proof points or you got
it is the equivalent of asking people to prom. It's being a freshman in high school and asking a senior, you're not allowed to go to prom as a freshman. You're asking a senior girl to take you to prom. That's effectively trying to make my pitch to invest in my crazy idea, which did not work out well for me at the prom stage. Later stage, I'm all right.
You got to cover. That's an interesting metaphor. I haven't heard that one before. I might have to work that into my monologue sometimes.
Honestly, like I'm not even trying to embellish this. It really, if you think about it, you lack self-confidence. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to sit in a room with people who presumably in your mind are more sophisticated, smarter, richer, whatever. A lot of times you don't realize that you're dealing with associates. You didn't do the diligence that you talked about, which is to identify who I should be talking to and who I shouldn't be talking to. Like who's in my league and who's out of my league.
Yep.
And you're just being vulnerable and they're beating the hell out of your, out of like your priceless possession. You think you're building and you have to move on from no to no, to no, to no, to no.
Yep.
Like it ain't shit. And that's really hard to do. And you can't, I think you can train it. You can curb it. You can, you know, make it a little less painful, but if you can't take a no, it's like, you can't take the punch. It's going to be hard.
You're absolutely right. You are asking smart people, sophisticated people, people who invest regularly. This is what they do. You know, as a profession. And for you, it's probably your first time, right? 99% of our customers, we've got 3,000 startups on the platform. And I'd say 99% of them are first time fundraisers, right? And like you just said, you are going to get rejected. I use this a lot in our talks. you're going to get rejected at least 95% of the time when you're pitching. And that was even when I raised capital for Founder Suite, that was my conversion rate or hit rate. I raised money from 5% of the people I pitched. That means I got rejected from 95% of the people I pitched. So it's incredibly hard. And the other thing I'll mention on that, it's not rocket science. I mean, I believe, truly believe that fundraising can be learned by anyone, but there are right ways to do it and wrong ways to do it. And it's easy to kind of shoot yourself in the foot by doing it the wrong way. So that's frankly the value proposition of Founder Suite, is they're trying to build tools that help you do it the right way.
I'm on foundersuite.com right now. And people listening to this really should check this out, because we'll have a bunch of pro tips coming from you in a second. I'm going to give a freebie right off the bat. If you look at what you have set up, gold, silver, basic, just like how your pricing structure is set up, if you read what's included in them, it literally is a subliminal message as to what's required and how much extra work it is to raise the money than you think, how much more time it's going to take, how many more meetings it's going to take, how you're going to have to track them, how many investors you're going to have to talk to. Like 25, like for me personally, it's like, I've got this great network with Technori. So like, hey, maybe I'm a basic guy, 25 invest. I mean, I am a basic guy, but that's a different topic. Like 25 investors in CRM. I'm going to call people I already know, and I'm going to basically just, you know, ham it out with them over time. But if you are like new to the game, or you're raising in an area that does not come from your background, like you're going to need 75 to 100. Like you just are.
At least, yeah.
This is kind of stupid, but if you're literally just about to raise money and know nothing about it, I think you should just go to your pricing page and read the membership tiers, because it like basically tells you all the tools you're going to need. It's incredible.
Yeah, and you're touching on something. One of the things I think people don't realize is it is a numbers game, and it stems back to what I just said there a minute ago, in that you're getting rejected 95% of the time, so you sales. Really have to be talking. Yeah, sales. You have to be talking to a lot of people, a lot of investor prospects, to find those 5-10 people out of 200 that, you know, believe in what you're doing and your message resonates with and that are willing to write your check. So that's one thing I see founders, they give up too quickly, right? I'll talk to a founder maybe on our platform who's like, hey, I need to cancel our subscription. We're not having any success. I'm like, how many investors have you talked to so far? Well, we talked to 20. I'm like, that's 10%. That's 10% of what you need to talk to, right? You barely scratched the surface. You've got to get out there and talk to a lot of people. And, you know, that's one of the many mistakes founders make, is giving up too early and not talking to enough investors.
So, I mean, yeah. Like I said, like you and I have the fortune of hosting a show that is moderately successful in some regards and is well known amongst people in investor and founder entrepreneurship in general. We have good networks. Even I have a CRM and Excel sheet that has over 1,400 investors across every single stage, because I don't know. I think the people that I'm talking to that I've done business with before will say yes and will get what I'm doing. I think, but I don't have time to be like, oh, I'm just going to sit and wait for 3 months and see if they're going to bite. Like you sure. You're fishing. You got to throw lines in the water. And I do think that there's an element to the founder part of this. It's like, which, you know, now that I think about it, saying it out loud, it's like, maybe that's intentional. Maybe that's like a good filter. Cause it's like, if you really can't do that, you can't push through that. Like if you actually did get the money, you're going to have a hell of a time, cause it just gets harder as you go.
Every round gets harder. This is another thing people don't always understand when they start to raise money, is let's say you are successful and you raise that $1 million from angels. Well, you're already on a track to be raising multiple rounds.
Right.
And each one gets harder and harder. The level of expectations of what you need to prove in your business gets almost exponentially higher at each level. Now, in some ways it also gets easier, because assuming your business is hitting its goals, you know, fundraising becomes a lot more about your metrics and numbers and less about your personal charisma as a founder or your personal network, right? So in some ways it becomes a little more formulaic, but that's the thing. It does get the level of expectations, you know, steps up significantly at each round. So
the pressure gets heavier.
Yeah,
pressure gets heavier. Delivering on what you're promised and going, I mean, you know, for us, like raising two small rounds in the same calendar year and having a bunch of people invest twice in the same company at a twice the price valuation. And in their mind, it's the same company. And they're like, wait, I put 100,000 in here. And now all of a sudden it's here. Like what happened? It's just, there is a relationship management to this. And that is no different than sales. And I always say, like, the CEO, founder, whoever it is on the founding team, somebody's got to be great at sales, or this is going to be hard to raise and hard to run a business in general, I think.
Yep. One of the things I talk about in our funding hacks talk, which we do for our customers, is even if it doesn't come naturally to you, you've got to channel your inner hustler, I like to say, right? Even if you're not a natural hustler, you're an introvert, maybe you're an engineer, you're a product person. That's all good as a founder, but you've got to be able to channel your inner hustler and get out there and hustle, or you've got to hire for that, you know, at the later rounds, right?
So in the early days, as you're building Founder Suite, are you like, this is kind of a two-part question. So you just brought up this, you know, are you a hustler and are you talking to these people? How hands-on do you get with some of these founders and some of the people who actually, you know, become subscribers to this, whether it's through events or, you know, professional development or whatever. And as compared to like the early days of when you like built this business, were you doing a lot of like hands-on meeting with these people and like, check it out, like try out our tools. Like what is the evolution here? Cause I feel like you have the great fortune and the misfortune that you're kind of the key link between successful fundraising. And that also means like you're like, you get a lot of the credit and then you also get none of the credit. Yeah. And then in the middle, like sure. When shit is going bad, you're the first line of them be like, hey, well, it's not working. And they like call you. So I'm just curious, like what was the first couple conversions like and how hands-on is it? And how hands-on is it now?
Believe it or not, even 6 years in, we're still pretty hands-on. I would say we're trying to, because like I said, we've got 3,000 startups. So we've got to kind of be scalable in our hands-on. But, you know, we do a couple things. Like we do a weekly onboarding live webinar where, and I used to do these kind of one-on-one, right? So here's where it's changed a little bit. Like now we're doing a weekly onboarding webinar where people come and ask questions and we show them how to use the product and all this stuff. And that's, you know, small groups instead of individual. For our gold subscribers, which is the $69 a month one, we will offer, now we don't do this for everyone, but we'll offer a free like pitch deck review strategy session, just a 30-minute, you know, little review of what their fundraising strategy is. But that's often really helpful to people, right? Just getting a third party perspective on your deck and your overall strategy in 30 minutes can actually really make a big difference in the sort of path or trajectory for these startups.
For sure.
And so that's good. And then, you know, a lot of our interaction still happens in our customer interactions, our customer support through Intercom, which we use. And I'm still really involved in a lot of that because I find like people, you know, often have the same problems, right? They're stuck on some specific part of their fundraise. And now, of course, we've created a lot of like macros and ready-made answers to those questions, but it's still a very much a personal non-automated, I guess it's called semi-automated, right? We've sort of semi-automated a lot of the pieces just so we can be working with a lot of startups at once. But it's still very much a bespoke concierge service in some ways. So, and I'm proud of that. I think that's good, right?
I mean, I think it becomes your differentiator. I know that obviously you have to scale the product and I think you can do that, but still offer help because it you know, it's just nature of your business. Like there's a little bit of a counselorishness that just has to exist because these people don't, many of them, as you said, first time founder, like they don't know. And there's no real safe place to go. Like you get sharked if you step outside of the box too much.
You have to be careful. If you're hiring people to help you on the fundraise, this is another question I get a lot is like, can you introduce me to someone to run my fundraise for you? No, I can't because no legitimate person will do that at the seed stage level.
Yeah.
There's no economics for a true investment banker to do it at a $2 million or $4 million round. Right.
Right.
So you got to be really careful if you're trying to, you know, like you just said, you easily get sharked. You really got to do this yourself as the CEO, as the founder for the first couple rounds. Once you get into later stage stuff, then you can bring in the experts, investment bankers, et cetera.
No, it makes total sense. I want to pivot towards the podcast for a second, your podcast. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but if it was, it was a brilliant move. Building a podcast around people learning from other people how they raised it. And also happening to own a company that potentially helps you raise it. Was this something that was created? Like, I'm sure it was in your head one way or the other, but was this something that was like a chicken or the egg? Like I have a strategy as to how we're going to use this channel, or is this something that's like, I'm hearing all the stories, which you cannot leave here without telling me at least one or two of the flaming dumpster fires that has happened and or super successful companies that have made it on your platform. But what was the order here? Did you plan the pod and that was a good marketing tool for you? Or is it a good marketing tool, I should say? Or is it like, look, this is the stories that I hear and I'm sharing it with you?
It was planned. It wasn't methodically planned, I guess you could say. One of our things that we try and do almost as a New Year's resolution every year is come out with some new marketing experiment. I think it's healthy for any startup, right, to just run experiments, especially on the marketing customer acquisition side. And so a couple of years ago, I guess it was like three years ago now, maybe even four, my experiment was to try out a podcast. Like, why not? And we started to interview founders on their fundraising journeys, and it's called How I Raised It. And it's just interviews with founders on how they raised their rounds. But what was interesting about it is we've had like 230 founders on this, and there are 230 different ways people have raised capital. Like I thought I knew everything about raising capital. I literally thought I had mastered this domain and had the 10,000 hour expertise. And then I get all these people on the show. I'm like, wow, that's new. I'd never heard of that before. You know, you kind of hear a lot of interesting different ways of raising money. And I've learned a ton from the show. So it kind of worked out as a way to expand our own knowledge about fundraising, which is what we're all about. But also it's a marketing tool, of course, you know, it's like talking to people. And many of them are customers. So we talk about how they've used our product. And so it all works out well. Very synergistic. Yeah.
I'm going to leave it as a cliffhanger, as a sales pitch to get on this show. I'm telling you, I think I have one that you've not heard before.
We'll get you on. Yeah.
I'm almost certain of it.
We'll get you back on because I think it'd be fun. But it's interesting that you get people that come at it from a completely different way. Like they're just working angel groups, or they're working their local regional angel network, or their local investors. I mean, there's a lot of different ways people kind of carve off and figure out how to get checks in the bank. It's really cool.
Oh, no, I don't doubt it. Yeah. I think it's amazing. Yeah. And obviously you talk about the new ways and, you know, Republican equity crowdfunding and just, you know, public offerings in general. Like we're seeing companies go on Toronto. We're seeing people like Rivalry is a company that is kind of based here now, is in Canada, listed privately. Instead of raising a Series A, they did that. Onlyalts.com doing public offerings where it's like, literally you can like, they have a couple commitments and then the rest is through AngelList or other. I just think it's a super valuable opportunity in the like particularly in your podcast to listen and hear other people talk about it. If for no other reason than to get comfortable with the idea that like maybe the first attempt is not the only way to do this. Like you could get no 10 times in a row. It's okay.
Looking at your business and yourself holistically, like for example, maybe right. You don't have a large investor network, but maybe you have in your business a large fan base or customer base,
right.
You know, crowdfunding might actually be relevant for you because you could possibly tap your customers or fans to raise small checks from lots of people. Or maybe, you know, you don't have that, but you have a great alumni network because you went to Stanford or Chicago Booth or, you know, whatever. I mean, kind of looking at like, where are my strengths in this? And then thinking about the different fundraising approaches that could fit. So,
no, yeah. Totally agree with you. All right, we got to wrap pretty quick here, but I want to talk to you about two things. I need to get at least one, feel free to pick your poison, at least one flaming dumpster fire of a company. It doesn't have to be the company. It could be the situation. Like they literally thought they were going to do this and we just knew that it couldn't be done. And then I would love to know, 1, 2, 3, whatever the number is, of companies that have come through your platform that are exceptionally talented that you, whether you want to plug them or just tell the story of it. Like, I would love to know who the winners and losers, we'll call it winners and losers.
Winners.
And there are losers. No losers, just winners and non-winners. How about that?
Winners and non-winners. Yeah. I mean,
very 2022 of me.
That's right. Everyone gets a ribbon in Scott's world.
Oh, I mean, the reality is that it could not be further from the truth.
No, I mean, in terms of dumpster fires, I don't want to name specific company names because shame the poor people when they've already been beaten down. But one thing we've seen a bit of a pattern on, we really try and not enable it, is you know, companies will come on and you can kind of tell based on some of their questions in our customer chat. They're like, hey, I see you have 10,000 investors in your SaaS, in your database. We have an investor database. So I see you have 10,000 investors under SaaS. How do I download that entire list and mass blast them an email? Or, and I'm like, you can't do that, because that's not how fundraising works. Investors can pick up on that right away, that you're spray and pray, that you're, you know, mass blasting. You really got to spend the time researching, identifying like good fit investors, and then ideally getting connected to them through a connector or intro source. So that's one thing I see people do. And sometimes it's even later in the game where they've already kind of sprayed and prayed, and they're like, hey, my email's gotten flagged from Google because for spam, right? I'm like, I'm sorry to hear that. You're coming to me a little late in this. I can't really help you with this. And then we go into a whole bunch of reasons why they need to spend the time, you know, warming up their email and domain and spending the time researching the right investors and having a more like laser focused approach. So we've seen people, and if you've done that, you've not only gotten flagged for spam and you're probably, you know, having a hard time sending email at all, but you've already kind of spent your load, right? It's really hard to kind of recover from that and go back 3 months later and run it the right way, because you've already, you know, you're already in their block list or something like that, right? So
that's also like very suspicious of just like the preparation you have in your business. Like I do know, like sometimes you get desperate, like we're on a 3 weeks of runway and I got to make a lot of meetings happen in a hurry. Like I actually understand how that could happen. But that said, like generally speaking, that's not the situation. And it's usually more like I'm just kind of haphazard about everything I do, in which case, I think that I probably have some judgments about your business to begin with.
Absolutely. And investors are attuned to this.
Oh yeah.
If you're an investor and you're getting this email, that's clearly a form email, or, you know, let's take two scenarios, right? Scott gets an email that is clearly just a blast. He's probably on a recipient list of 2,000. You're like, these guys are lazy. These, they don't know who I am. They are simply spraying and praying and hoping someone responds. Now, contrast this with another scenario where Scott gets an email from a company and says, hey, Scott, I've been following you. I've been following Technori. I've, you know, listened to 24 of your episodes. These are three of my favorite. I've been seeing your investments on Republic and what you're doing there. You know, I think you're going to like what we're doing. Here's what we're doing, little short summary of it. And it is resonates with the type of investments you've done. And then a day later, some mutual friend of yours also kind of makes that intro, like, hey, Scott, you got to talk to Nate over here. He's doing some really cool stuff. Like, think about that response. Like, it feels good to you that you're getting that intro, because this person's clearly done their homework and it's a qualified outreach, right? So anyway, that's
no, I think it's super important, because it literally, like, the other one feels like you don't respect my time.
Yep.
Like, you're going to ask me for insight about your business and I don't know anything about it, but you don't care. It's weird. What are the winners? Who are the winners that have come through Founder Suite?
Actually, one that's kind of fun. It's a woman named Ava Gochera, and her company is called Mod, and it's like a sexual products, sexual well-being products. And like 10 years ago, if you'd asked me if you could raise capital for a startup that's selling like healthy sex products, I'm like,
yep.
No, of course not.
I am familiar with this company, not from my personal life, unfortunately, but I am familiar with this company.
Yeah. So they're doing great and been a longtime user, and she's doing it the right way. Like, one of the,
to be clear, they're a longtime user of Founder Suite. You're not a longtime user of Mod. I want to make sure the aggregators don't get you. You can admit it. It's fine if you are. It's fine.
I haven't tried the products myself, actually. So I should qualify that, but they're a longtime user of Founder Suite.
There's time. There's time.
There's still time. She's done it the right way. Like, I've seen her sending out investor updates. She really is careful and conscientious about both nurturing and updating her investors that have already written her checks. And she has some pretty high profile investors on there. So she engages them in her business, right? So she sends a regular investor update to those folks, and she nurtures, you know, one other thing I tell founders to do is nurture relationships with investors. even 6 months before you're planning to raise capital. So again, let's use that scenario. If some founder reaches out to you, Scott, and says, hey, Scott, I've been, you know, following Technori forever, love what you're doing. I'm not raising money right now, but I'm going to be, you know, early this summer. Can I just add you to my company update distribution list? And you start to get, you know, these updates once a month, once every other month, but you're able to see the progress of this company. And then in June or July, when they're actually raising money, they say, all right, Scott, I'd love to set up a pitch meet with you. You've kind of warmed up to that business, right? You've followed along what they're doing. You've seen the progress. You're going to be a lot more receptive to that because it's been, they've nurtured you, you know, for lack of a better term.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And it's, I think it, the investor update is the one of the most underutilized tools in the entire sales of VC game. It is the leave behind. If you're familiar with the Seinfeld episode, it is that leave behind that, you know, I got to come back. Like, hey, I get an invite to at least email you back. Did you get my invite in my investor update? And then for those who have invested in your company, like the last thing they want to do is have you just go off the grid. So, you know, like I think people should spend a lot more time respecting the investor update. That is definitely underused, I think.
Absolutely. One other I'll just mention, and this is again a customer plug, but it's a company called Allstar, and I'm not into this world, but basically it's creating this platform where they're allowing people, it's like a TikTok for gamers. So if you're a hardcore gamer, you go on here, you can record your clips, and you know, you kind of use the platform to ultimately become a professional gamer. And he's been really good just in the way he runs a really efficient fundraise. He's using our data room product. He's using the CRM. I see him create momentum and FOMO every time he fundraises, right? He's really on top of things. Like the guy must not sleep. I don't, you know.
He's a gamer, so it's monster energy. And there is no sleep.
He's got his monster drinks and everything else.
Oh, yeah. So
All-Star Gaming, really impressive. Just the way, I mean, it's not a Robin Hood. It's not a, you know, billion-dollar company yet, but I think he's on the track to be there, right? His market is huge. The way he runs his business, the way he runs his fundraise, like I said, is just really professional, really expert. And I see him creating that momentum and FOMO in every round, which is kind of the ideal situation for any founder.
I mean, that is ultimately when you're trying to sell anything, it is FOMO that makes you sell everything. That's why TikTok crushes. There's a lot to be learned there. I think this is amazing. Like the product suite you've built is super useful. If I could figure out how to like export what's in my head and the patterns, weird patterns that I've built into my lifestyle, it would be perfect for me. And there's so many founders that I wish we had connected for when Technori was doing the stage events. We'd get them all set up with Founder Suite because they all need it. Foundersuite.com, and obviously check out the podcast. And hope to flip this back. We do the podcast back. I tell you some goofy stories about raising money.
Appreciate let me come on the show again. It's fun to connect and hear what's going on. And yeah, give us a shout. Give us a look, foundersuite.com. And I'm just at nathan@foundersuite.com if you want to ping me or have any questions.
Dude
about
just
the
gives
product.
His email away. Are you nuts? What are you doing?
Well, geez, am I going to regret this? No.
No. Well, I don't know, actually.
Don't know.
Don't know the answer to that.
I like to connect with our users. I mean, I started doing this because I love entrepreneurship. I love founders. I love the energy of working with founders. It keeps me young. I'm actually 96 years old and
you look great.
You know, thanks.
I feel like there's legitimately a thing there. There's when you get older, not saying you're older, just clarifying, as you get older, people are like, oh man, startups keep me young. And when you're like 29 to 40, startups age the shit out of you. So like I'm the body of a 52-year-old, but I'm actually 38. And you're 29, but you're, you know, 94. It's an amazing parallel.
You're completely correct there. Cause I have gray hair now. I started with black hair. Startups for the first like couple years in particular with Founder Suite, it aged me horribly. Because it was so stressful. That's another thing founders don't understand is it's so stressful. So many waking nights where you can't sleep because the world is, because you're running out of money. Because
first dollars raised, I got the gray in the sideburns. It was immediate. Uh-huh.
Anyway, so, but then once you kind of get over the hump, it keeps you young. So it's a weird reverse, fountain of youth.
Well, you know, whatever. Hey, it'll be easier if you're using Founder Suite. That's bottom right. line here. So I appreciate you, Nathan, taking the time to come on the show.
All right, Scott, thanks so much. Good to reconnect. Course. Thank you.
Of course, you too. If you're interested in self-directed investing from startups to crypto and public markets, my Substack is a great way to learn how professional investors screen, review, and pull the trigger on deals. Join the largest community of micro investors and startup founders on Substack by going to katoon.com.